Reina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
In this episode, Chevalier. Hello, everybody. Welcome to season 4. We hope you had a great summer and are ready to get cozy again and travel to the past with us. We have a great episode and a great season planned for all of you.
Yes, we had an amazing summer holiday together. We had the opportunity to travel a little bit through Austria and to Malta. And this inspired us a whole lot. And we'll try to pour all of that into our new season.
Yeah, that's right, Gabby. We had an amazing summer. We had an amazing holiday. We went to, of course, Austria, where you live, but also Malta, a place that we had dreamed of visiting together for a long time. And we saw so many historical sites and we saw great art together. So we are full of inspiration and hopefully it will translate to this new season of the podcast. Are you ready?
Yes, very ready.
All right. So, Gabby, before we start, as we always do, can you give us some facts about Chevalier?
Sure, Nene. Chevalier is a biographical drama based on the life of French Caribbean musician Joseph Bologne, also known as Chevalier de Saint-Georges. What is interesting in this first sentence is his origins, French Caribbean. So with that, we know he was a black man. He was born in Guadeloupe and grew up in France. So this will certainly be a topic in the film and in our discussion. The film came out in 2022 and had its premiere at the 47th Toronto International Film Festival. The film was directed by Stephen Williams. And just to mention a few of his most relevant works, Stephen Williams is a Canadian producer and director, and he is known for numerous TV series. And just to mention a few, he has done How to Get Away with Murder, The Walking Dead, and maybe most famously, Lost and Watchmen. The film was written by Stephanie Robinson. She is a writer and producer and an Emmy Award nominee for her works in this series, What We Do in the Shadows. This is a pretty, pretty remarkable duo.
Mm-hmm.
The main role of Joseph Bologne is played by Kelvin Harrison Jr., who also played the role of Christian in the latest adaptation of Cyrano from 2022. It also stars Lucy Boynton as Marie Antoinette, Samara Weaving as Marie-Josephine, Ronke Adekoluejo as Nanon, Joseph's mother, Alex Fitzalan as Philippe, he was best friend of Joseph, and Minnie Driver as La Guimard, which was for me quite cool to see Minnie Driver again on screen. Two nice pieces of trivia on the film. Kelvin Harrison Jr. Practiced very, very long for this film. And how did it come to this? His father is a classical music teacher. So when he got offered the role by Stephen Williams, he asked, you know, I don't play the violin, so could we get a double for the scenes where Joseph is playing the violin? So the director said, I'm not getting a double. So if you don't do it, I might just get another actor. And Kelvin thought, well, that's maybe not the best option. I'd rather ask my dad to teach me how to play the violin. So his dad practiced with him for 7 days a week, 6 hours every day for five full months in preparation for his role, which is really, really remarkable. So knowing this, we know that these scenes where he plays the violin are even more impressive, as they already are.
Wow.
And another interesting fact that I found during research, Stephanie Robinson said in an interview that she knew about the existence of Joseph Bologna already when she was in high school. She heard about his story, and they handled the topic in high school years. And she was already wondering back then as a 17-year-old girl, thinking, how this is an amazing story. How was not this brought to the screen already? So she has been dreaming about making something with the story already for a very long time. So this was like a dream come true for her to be able to tell this story on the big screen. So yeah, that's a short summary of the facts of the film. How about the plot, Mene?
All right. Well, thank you so much for those facts, Gabby. That's a lot of incredible information that already is informing what we think about the movie with these two creators behind it. So as I always try to do, I'm going to try to give a brief summary of the plot. All right, so here it goes. Chevalier tells the story of Joseph Bologna, Chevalier de Saint-Georges, an 18th century French musician known through history as the Black Mozart. Set in Paris in the years leading to the French Revolution, the film follows the life of Bologna from his young age until he reached his peak as a violinist, conductor, and fencing champion. A member of Marie Antoinette's circle of friends and artists, Bologna was admired all over France, even almost becoming the conductor for the Paris Opera. However, his position as a Black man of mixed heritage in 1780s Paris meant that life was not always easy for this prodigious artist. Love, genius, politics, heart, and passion are all part of this fascinating and untold story in cinema. All right. So that was my attempt at a summary.
That was pretty good. Very on point.
All right. Okay, so if you have been listening to the podcast, you know that we are trying to have a little bit more of a historical context before we launch our discussion. So we are continuing with this this season as well. So just before we start our discussion, I just want to just very briefly talk about the historical context and just mainly about the biography of Joseph Bologna. This movie is based on a true story. This is a real life character, which is a very important piece of information when we are when discussing this movie. So essentially, the historical context is 18th century France in the years leading to the French Revolution. So we're talking about the Ancien Régime in France. You know, Joseph Bologna was born in 1745, December 25th. He was born in Guadeloupe, as Gabby mentioned. It was a French colony at the time. Today, Guadeloupe is a French department. He was the son of a plantation owner, white plantation owner, obviously, and a slave young girl called Nanon. She was 17 when she gave birth to Joseph. Joseph grew up in Guadeloupe, but at seven, his father took him to France to pursue his education. And he remained there for the entirety of his life, except for a couple trips that he did to England. So in France, he did music studies and fencing, and he became extremely, extremely good at both of them. He became renowned for both his musical abilities and his fencing abilities. He was part of Marie Antoinette's circle of artists and friends. He almost got the role of conductor of the Paris Opera, but As we will discuss, he did not get this role, this position, due to his mixed race. There was a petition made by a few women of society saying that they couldn't accept a man of mixed race being the director of the most important orchestra in France. So he didn't get this. During the revolution, he was captain, I think captain, I could be very wrong, I don't know, of the first black battalion. So he fought for the revolution. He, however, because of his association with Marie Antoinette during the terror that followed the French Revolution, he was in prison for several months, but he survived. He lived a fascinating life. He died very young, at 51, in Paris, and he wrote numerous works. This is not an obscure figure. His works include operas, symphonies, numerous violin concertos, chamber music, and vocal works. So this is a little bit about his life, the historical context, before we launch into the discussion.
Very well, Nene, thank you for that. I think it's really important to have this in mind throughout the discussion, because this is certainly going to play a role in the conversation. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. All right.
All right.
Are we ready now?
Oh, yes. So while watching the film, and also while doing the research in preparation for our episode, I was thinking about the story itself, since it's a real historical figure. And I was wondering whether this could be something that we could dig into. The film tells a story of a widely unknown person. So it is very important that this is being brought up to a bigger audience now. So what I would be really interested in is, what are your thoughts on the role of cinema as an educational format? How to draw that line between informative educational content and artistic expression from the filmmakers?
Ah, such a good question, Gabby. And of course, we are just fans. We're just movie fans. We are not experts. But this is my opinion. I think very specifically for this character and for this story, I think a movie is very suitable. I think making a movie out of the story of Joseph Bologne is wonderful. I think movies can reach a wide audience usually. I don't want to brag, but I just recently interviewed a filmmaker here in Canada who had kind of like the same, and I asked the same, he was dealing with a very political subject about foreign workers in Canada, and he had been researching this topic for many, many years, and he considered making a documentary, but in the end he decided to make a fiction film, a fictionalized film, for different reasons. One of them was to kind of protect the privacy of everybody he talked to by fictionalizing their stories, but also, you know, with the idea, perhaps if I do a fiction film, a dramatic film, I can reach wider audiences. And I think in the case of this character, and this is the first time that we see the story of Joseph Bologne, this is the first time that you and I are learning about this musician. I think this was a very good choice for many reasons. First, yes, reach a wider audience, but also I was thinking, you know, this is a very classic period film in look, in style, and to use the language of period film, which is traditionally white European, to tell a story about a black character that was moving about society in the time of Marie Antoinette is a very kind of almost subversive way of using the language of period film to tell this story that was hidden in plain sight. So for me, I think the last thing I will say about this is films like this one, where they're based on real history, can serve as the entry point for education. Like for me, this is the entry point to learn about this. Like after I see this movie, I will go and read a biography and see maybe a couple of, I don't think there's a proper documentary. I think there's little clips, films, small films on YouTube, like those 10 minute little videos about it. So yeah, movies can really teach you and they can kind of be your entryway to learning the history. So that's my point of view. What about you, Gabby? What do you think?
I really appreciate your insight on this, Nene. I really agree that it should be just like an eye opener, like an appetizer for further research and investigation. And I think it's not an easy task for a filmmaker to reach exactly that balance. The line to draw this line, as I included in my question, it's really, really hard. It can fall easily onto the documentary kind of style. And I don't know if it's correct to draw comparisons, but I couldn't resist to make a few while watching the film and also now while hearing your answer to this, because we have discussed a few films in our series of podcasts that deal with historical figures and tell a story based on true figures, true characters from history. And rarely one of them have really drawn that line correctly. If I may mention Harriet, which is an incredibly well-done film. It's an incredibly passionate story. The story of Harriet is unbelievable. This woman was impressive in every way. And still, the film tended frequently to fall into the let's check some of her most important biography milestones within the next 2 hours. So I think that balance was done way better in Chevalier. As you mentioned, it was like just the opening door to open your appetite for more knowledge on that.
Yeah, I love your comment about that, because Harriet was a movie that, you know, you have a real life that is just so full already that just by itself it seems almost hard to believe that this person could do, you know, could live such a life. I think we're going into the territory of the biopic. That's such a funny word in English. English has so many funny words. The biopic. Yeah, the biopic, that's one of the dangers of the biopic, which is just go through each of the most important moments of a person's life in chronological order, and it tends to be kind of a little bit boring or a little bit uninspired. You know, you learn about the life, but it doesn't tell you much more beyond that. Where in Chevalier, I think the script
was exceptional.
The script was extraordinary, and there's many parts that are obviously fictionalized and dramatized, but you get the impression. You get the impression of a life. You get a good impression of feeling of the time. You get a good sense of, what this person had to go through in the position that he had as a black man in the Ancien Régime in Paris, moving about in the music world. It's difficult to express. I mean, they did a brilliant job in portraying and making it really inspired. It's like
exactly.
It's really inspired. It's not point by point.
And I think the key to success in this film, when we go go deeper into this, is that they focus on a short period of his life, like the most important period of his life. They didn't really try to widespan the film throughout his entire life. So you say, okay, this is like, we're going to take out of his entire life, we're going to take this moment, and we're going to make a story around this point, you know? Another comparison, The Liberator drop into this ambition of covering most of Simón Bolívar's life. And that was way too ambitious. So I think if we put that in perspective, I think that balance was done very well here in this film.
Yeah. Oh, Gaby, I love your mentioning El Libertador, because similar to El Libertador, Chevalier tells a practically untold story, right? El Libertador had never, like, the life of Simón Bolívar had never been shown in a feature film like this for white audiences. So same as Chevalier, and see they had two different approaches. And this makes me think in literature you have a biography and you have memoir. So in biography is essentially somebody who will, biography or autobiography, but let's talk about biography. You will have you will have the entirety of a person's life told in a book, when they were born, maybe even the parents, and then all the milestones in that person's life, where memoir is usually written in the first person, and it's usually written, you know, memoir is personal and is biographical in many ways, obviously. You're talking about yourself, but it's usually a period of your life or an aspect of your life. So I think maybe that's another apt comparison here, where El Libertador was biography. Chevalier was a sort of third-person memoir.
Yeah, yeah.
which is a contradiction. Memoir is first-person. But anyway, it's just like a few chapters in this person's life, not all.
Yes, absolutely. So I think this gives way, I think this, with this conclusion, we can give a lot of credits to the script writing from Stephanie Robinson. This was really, in my eyes, was really, really remarkable. All right, Nene. Are you up for another interesting question?
Yes, I am.
I had the liberty of choosing the topics of discussion for this episode. And one thing that I found interesting in the film is the balance or unbalance of male and female roles. And specifically the roles that have an impact on Joseph Bologna. So in my eyes, there are relatively few male roles that have an impact, while the female characters seem to be stronger. Even the supporting roles seem to have like a bigger and more impactful influence on Joseph Bologna. We see Joseph, of course, in the main role. There's a villain in the story. It follows a relatively classical scheme, the storytelling. So we see a villain who is the husband of Marie Josephine. We see his friend Philippe. So the other roles, main roles, are very secondary. On the other side, we see a few women that play a more important role in his life. We see Marie Antoinette as one of his patrons. We see Marie Josephine, who I mentioned is like the wife of the villain. I don't even remember the name of the villain. But Marie Josephine.
He was a marquis or something.
He was a marquis, whatever. But Marie Josephine, of course, we will discuss this, tends to ends up having an affair with Joseph Bologna. And she was a singer of the opera. And we have another wonderful character, Madame Genlis, who is a great supporter and friend of Joseph and help him with his work. And last but not least, we see the mother of Joseph, Nanon, who is, in my eyes, one of the most beautiful characters in the film. So my question to you is, how do you like, did you see this? Did you pick this up? And if you did, how what do you think about this?
Such a good question, Gabby. to answer the first question, no, I didn't pick up on this at all. Only when you asked me the question, I noticed that. So to begin with, that's an amazing observation that you made of this movie. Thank you for that. How did I like this aspect of the film? Now that you mention it, I love it. I love it, and it gave me a lot to think about. I'm going to try to answer briefly. This movie is telling the story of a figure that has been hidden from history, like on purpose.
Yes, maybe we have to mention that. While doing research, we read that his work was destroyed by Napoleon on purpose. This is why we don't know anything about this. So there's very few of the many things he did.
Yeah. I'm trying not to say anything about Napoleon because only not very good words will come out. But yes, what we need to understand by, you know, understanding the biography of Joseph Boulogne is that he was not an obscure underground musician. He was an important member of a French society when he was living. He was well known. He was admired. He was respected. He moved about Marie Antoinette's circles. When he was denied the position of the conductor of the Paris Opera, she actually welcomed him even further into her circles so he will play in her private concerts. This is not a figure that was hidden in the shadows in any way. So how do you explain that in the 21st century, when we know so many classical musicians that have come down through history, obviously Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Schubert, Chopin, Schumann, all of them that we can drop, like name drop like this, even if you don't study music. I study music. I study classical music for a long time, and we study music history, classical music history, and I never heard of Boulogne, Chevalier de Saint-Georges. So you can see that his story was really erased on purpose. Like, how else do you explain it? And to answer the question about the women, is we're telling a story that has been erased from history for centuries. Okay, on purpose, not on purpose. And who are telling, whose stories are being propped up alongside his? The women in his life. Whose stories have been erased from history? Women's stories. Our stories have been erased from history as well. Women artists, women musicians, women violinists, composers, painters. We have to dig deep to find those stories. And what we have been learning, you and I, what we have been learning through this podcast is that we grew up with the sense, okay, well, maybe women were not good painters, or maybe Black people
were
not good.
Uh-huh.
They were none, or maybe they, why weren't they? Well, you know, it's a fallacy, right? It's a lie. And what we have started to understand is that these people existed, these people work. Angelica Kaufman painted, Vigée Lebrun painted and was successful. So what we have been learning is that these people existed. They worked, they were successful, they were well known at the time, but history chose on purpose to forget them, to erase them. So now that you mentioned that the women, for me, it's a beautiful demonstration. This is our time to tell these stories. Through this movie, this is the time to tell the stories of these women, these men that were on purpose hidden from history. And I'm going to mention just one character that you said as well, Madame Genlis. Madame Genlis is kind of like the producer. She was kind of the patron of Joseph Boulogne, the one who paid for his operas. And she's a remarkable character. She was powerful. She was connected. She had the money. She had the taste. She had the knowledge to pay for his work. And this is reality. This is how it worked. This is not lies. These women were moving society. These women, like Madame Jeanne, they did move behind the scenes.
They were the managers.
They were the managers. They were pulling all the strings in society. So I love that aspect, and I love that you mention it. What about you?
Well, while watching the film, I mean, I came up with a question while preparing for the podcast, but while watching the film, I realized, and maybe this is why I came up later on with a question, I realized that the best dialogue lines came from the women. From me, the female characters had the best lines, and I'm going to quote a few. Maybe we can talk about those. I wrote a few while watching the film, so be prepared. Let's take Marie Josephine. Marie Josephine was a rich woman. She was, as you mentioned, married to an aristocrat of the time, but she was also a very talented and gifted singer. She was a singer in the opera, and this is why their path met, Joseph and Marie Josephine. And so they have a conversation because, of course, Joseph is like, I'm going to write an opera, and I would love you to be the singer of my opera. You have the voice and you have the passion that I need to convey my music for this opera. And in this conversation that she has, she says the following: I can pretend to not be at all troubled by my lack of autonomy. I found that really cool. You know, she knew that she can just pretend it, but she was very well aware of her lack of autonomy because, of course, her husband was against Marie Josephine playing her role of the opera. I found that really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, what happens is that she's married to this man who's a very powerful, Gabby, we didn't research this properly. I mean, we are erasing the male character.
Maybe we're not doing any justice to the villain.
We are ourselves guilty of erasing some male characters. We don't care at this point. They have had all the history of movies and books for them. So this guy, the husband, he was completely against her being a singer. Like, he was not allowed. It was indecent in his eyes for her to be singing opera.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is what she says, okay, I have to play a role. And I can pretend, I can play along. I can play the role of not being troubled, of not being crushed by my lack of autonomy. I found it really strong. And then he says, yeah, but you know, you love opera and you can do whatever you want. And he said something, and then he says, you have no idea what interests me. And that I found really cool as well. Because he was already like, what usually happens maybe today is that we women are labeled and maybe not judged right away, but very superficially. And I think it was very subtle in that way, how she said, I am way deeper and I'm way profounder than what you have just seen of me. I found it really cool. The other character that I loved among these four main female characters is the mother. Is the mother of Joseph, Nanon. As we mentioned, is played by Ronke Adekolueje. I certainly said it wrong. Adekolueje, And for me, the role of Joseph's mother is a representation of his roots and like kind of his conscience. You know, mm-hmm. he's a black man in a white society.
Yeah.
And he has been in France since his seventh year. So he has grown into the white society and he has been following white society patterns and following white society expectations. Yeah. So as soon as the mother comes into his life, he starts she brings him to reconnect with his roots. So I found her role extremely, extremely important and moving. And there's a scene pretty much at the end where they are both in one room. There has been like lots of things happening to Joseph. As you mentioned already in the summary of the plot, he was close to being chosen the director of the Paris Opera, but he didn't get this job. And apart from that, his affair with Marie-Josephine comes up. And they go through very, very, very rough patch. And yeah, some dramatic stuff. I don't want to put too many spoilers, but some dramatic stuff happens.
Yeah.
And he's very mellow. He's very depressed, and he's going through a rough time. And he's sitting with his mother in his apartment, and she's doing his hair. And he's just talking about how hurt he feels about not having choice. You know, he's like, why do everybody has a choice and I don't have a choice? Why is everybody mean and I mean to me as a man or as a black man? And she says, her dialogue in this scene is so, so good. It's so, so deep, so profound. I'm just going to read you two sentences that I wrote because I really found this really good. She says, "This world is full of wickedness. It is how they designed it for us. The greatest evil is convincing us that we have no choice." That was, for me, as I said, I think the women in the film got the best lines. Finally.
Yeah.
Not to mention the scriptwriter is a woman.
That's what I was going to say. But before I add anything, do you have another line?
Let me check my notes. That's pretty much it from my side.
That's pretty, yeah. I mean, with that one, mic drop. I mean,
mic drop.
You summarize the entire story. Can you repeat again? The wickedness is making
this
us.
This world is full of wickedness. Ah, yeah. The greatest evil is convincing us that we have no choice.
The greatest lie, and that's the erasure.
That
is referring to the erasure, that you don't exist. That's the greatest evil, convincing us, even us in the 21st century, that this person did not exist. That is the erased. You do not belong to history. You are unimportant. You do not belong in museums or orchestras around the world. That is the greatest evil, and making us like the, and when you don't have, when you erase histories, women or people of color, black people, when you erase whatever or people, you know, any history, you are erasing the representation in the world. Like, you don't exist. Like, you and I, as Latin American women, we never saw anything like about ourselves anywhere that we thought was worth admiring, like a museum or a movie. Like, and then the conclusion, even in your subconscious, is that, well, we probably are not good enough. It must mean that we don't belong. If we're not there, it's because we don't belong. Not because we were erased, not because we didn't have a chance. It's like, yeah. So convincing that she was a slave. Nanon was a slave. She was, Nanon's story is terrible. She was a 17-year-old enslaved woman. She was the personal enslaved woman. Like, she was the personal, I don't like to say the word slave. She was a personal slave of Joseph's father. And she was obviously taken advantage by this man, or I don't know what happened. I don't know. We don't know. But she gave birth to Joseph at 17. She was only freed when the man, Joseph's father, died, right? She became a free person, right? She had, she really did have no, she really have had no choice.
But she still chose among the, yeah, her circumstances. She was still convinced that there was still something that she could decide upon.
And yeah.
She chose to look for her son.
Exactly.
It's very moving.
She explains to him when she's doing braiding his hair,
braiding his hair.
I found a profoundly moving scene. Mm-hmm. Because, oh my God, because we are in France. We are in France in the 1780s. There's a lot of women.
This film fulfilled all the requirements for the podcast, because there were so many wigs and candles.
So many wigs and candles. So there's a lot of wigs. And the wig here is absolutely important, because he's been wearing a wig like the fashion demands. And he looks stunning, this man with this wig. Oh, my God.
Ooh. But it's, of course, a straight hair and
yeah,
a bright wig.
A white wig. But when his mom comes, he takes it off and she's braiding his hair. And they have this conversation while he's braiding her. And he's telling her, what she's telling him is that when they took you away from me, your father took you to France and she stayed as a slave back in Guadeloupe. I tried to find you every day, every single night. I tried to find you. So what she's saying is that the choice is within. Mm-hmm. The choice doesn't come from outside. Choice, free will, desire, all of those things come from within. Nobody can take it away from you. Oh, thank you, Gabby. Thank you for mentioning that part of the movie.
I think she had the best. She had the best role.
Me too.
She was very remarkable.
Very remarkable. And Joseph is a remarkable character, but she as well.
Absolutely.
As a freed slave moving in society afterwards.
And as we mentioned, she in the film, in the story, she has a very important function. In the story, she needs to bring Joseph back to his roots. She is the one who makes him, from the moment she arrives, you see him without a wig in his house. And they even go out once together, and Joseph is not wearing his wig. So he's showing his braided black hair. So I think she has a very clear, practical function in this story.
Yeah.
She has to bring Joseph to his roots, and she takes him to this alley where, many freed people from the colonies are gathered together and making music. So she is the one who is like symbolically who brings him into his, guides him back to his roots.
Back to his roots. And before we talk about all the other women, but at that scene that you're describing, when they go out and they go to this back alley where there's music and where all of the, where the community, where the black community mm-hmm. is gathering, I found that one of the most beautiful scenes. And, this is probably one of those fictionalized scenes. This is probably one of those dramatized scenes. But for me, it was one of the most important scenes, because we're talking about erasure in history. And there's something that we have talked a little bit in this podcast that, where are the black characters in movies, unfortunately, in period films, especially American period films, is usually enslaved people, and those are the costumes that they're wearing, those are the roles that they're playing. But here we see the, perhaps formerly enslaved people now free, or even people who were born free, because this was a fact as well. Mm-hmm. People who were born free and were living, and we don't see them in period films. Their stories don't exist. They're always in the corners. They're always beyond the frame of the movie, but they existed. They lived. These people lived lives,
and they were part of society. They were somehow
part of society.
Society.
Of course, but we don't see them. We don't see. So this scene, I think, is very important in showing that these communities existed, and it's a beautiful scene where they're playing music, and he sits and he plays. I found that one of the most moving scenes of the movie, and I loved it. And it's, again, it's probably one of those fictionalized ones, but I think a key scene to show, to show how life would have been for these people.
You wanted to talk about other characters before we move on to the next section?
Do you have any comments about the other? Should we talk about Marie Antoinette or no?
Do you want to say something about Marie Antoinette?
I don't know. We have seen so many Marie Antoinettes.
We have seen many Marie Antoinettes, and I have to say that she was not my favorite. What I found interesting about this Marie Antoinette was that she, I don't know. I struggled. because she was constantly in Paris, and she was like, constantly going into the opera and out. And I found I don't know if this was correct, because as far as I'm concerned, Marie Antoinette was pretty much 99% of her time in Versailles or in her little villa. I found it which is interesting, because of course they wanted to show which role she played in his life, which was very cleverly done to put her in Paris. And to also to see this side of Marie Antoinette, her connection with arts, and seeing her as a music patron, I found it very very cool, very relevant. But as I said, I struggled with the historical part. Maybe I was expecting too much. Maybe I'm spoiled.
I also struggled with this Marie Antoinette. I love Lucy Boynton. The where we had seen her was as the Freddie Mercury's partner, or I don't know if it was
she plays the girlfriend in Bohemian Rhapsody
in Bohemian Rhapsody, and she was really good. She was I remember her from that movie, and unfortunately at this characterization I did not. Like, it took me a while to understand. That she was playing Marie Antoinette. Oh, this is supposed to be Marie Antoinette. It's very different. It's a very different take on Marie Antoinette. But like you said, it's a practical character, right? Just to show his connections. And it's also like, how do we insert him in society, in these circles? How do we show that he belongs? So this is kind of like the best way to do it. And it's true. He belonged to her circles. Like, he played concerts for her and so on. But it was not my favorite characterization. She was not very nuanced. And we are used to nowadays, right? Because Marie Antoinette's character, during her time and for 2-3 centuries after, was very negative, right? So we are now in the period, right, of revising her life and seeing her in a more nuanced way, in the sense that she was very much a victim of her time. She was a child bride and so on, and all those things. So it's kind of weird to kind of go back a little bit, and she's kind of like not very nice character, and not very nuanced, and so it's a little strange, but it's okay. It's okay. It's part of what the movie needed.
So there's one more character that maybe you can give me your opinion on. Mini Driver's character from La Guimard, I think it was the name.
La Guimard.
What do you say to that?
I think for me this was not the best casting. I like Minnie Driver, but she took me out of the movie. She's British, but I don't know why I keep seeing her anyway, this is supposed to be France. All the characters speaking English, so it should not be an issue, but I don't know why I couldn't. She was my least favorite. And it's because, like, once again, it wasn't a very nuanced it wasn't a very nuanced character. She was a singer who was of a certain age, and she was very kind of bitter. And it was kind of like one note for me. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, for me, it was, I mean, I liked Minnie Driver, and I was like, oh, I haven't seen her in such a long time. So it was nice to see her again. I don't know, maybe it's because I'm biased, because her role was not supposed to be very, very good into the entire story. One thing I liked of her performance, let's say, of her entire performance, was one line that she said. I think it was really, really well done. There's a very scene also towards the end of the film where we learned that Joseph is not getting the job as the director of the Paris Opera, and he confronts Marie Antoinette with this decision. So we see Marie Antoinette sitting next to Christoph Gluck, who got the job, and Minnie Driver, Lucky Matt, sitting also next to Marie Antoinette, and Joseph approaches them, and he tells Marie Antoinette, I thought you were my friend, and I thought you were my supporter, and so on. And in that moment, in that constellation, in that situation, he talks to Lucky Matt and says, okay, you are just so poisonous, and you are just mad at me because I didn't want to get too close to you. And at the end of the day, we both know that you know that I am the better one for this job. And this is what I liked. I liked her response. She said, I do know that you're the best one, but I don't care.
Whoa!
And I think that scene was really, really well done from her side. That was...
She was very, sincere. It's like, it's about power.
It's about power.
It's about exerting my power, just showing the power that I have.
Yeah. Okay, then I think we've gone through every major female character. So I think we're ready for our next section on this podcast. What do you say?
Yes, I think we are ready. So as if you have been listening, you know that we introduced the Wicks and Candles quiz last season, and we're going to continue. It's in fact our favorite section of the podcast. All right, so the Wicks and Candles quiz. We have 5 questions, and we're going to go take turns to answer. We added a new question this year. Let's try it out and see how it goes. All right, Gabby. So let's start with the quiz. The first question, what is your sweaty wig? One thing you didn't like about the movie.
Well, Nene, I think all in all, the movie was very well done. There's still something about the style of the film that got me off a little bit, and it was like the modern touches of the film. For me, it was not really consistent. Like they wanted to do like a really true to the period film, because you see the setting, the entire cinematography, the costume design, set design. It was all very, I would say, pretty accurate. Maybe the costumes are kind of modern. But all in all, it was like the tone of the film was like a classical period film. But there were some modern elements. There were some modern elements that were not really consistent. Some of the dialogues were modern. At some point, somebody says the F word, and also, there's one part where Joseph says, yeah, just disgusting. And I was just thinking, okay, this is not really accurate. But then again, you see some of the dialogue was, but then kind of really classical period style. Yeah. So I think the style was not really consistent. There's other films where you see it from the beginning. I might make, if I am allowed to, another comparison. In Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette, the style was clear from the beginning. She wanted modern film, and the style was consistent in the dialogue, in the costume design, the setting design, in the choice of music, everything. But for me here, it was not consistent. That got me off a little bit. That was my sweaty week. How about yours?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that, Gabby. I have two tiny sweaty weeks. Too tiny, because this movie, it truly is beautiful. And like you said, it's like a classic period film. From the look, the sound, the cinematography, which is, you know, how is film and how is the lighting done. And it's really beautiful. Like, you get the sense of the salons, you get the sense of the, you know, the golden light of candles. The set design is really beautiful. So I have, it's like very small. The makeup. I mean, I'm picking
yes.
Right.
So this is also modern. Yeah, go ahead.
And the thing is, you can make those choices. You can make those choices. Obviously, it's an artistic product, right? So the filmmakers are free to make all the artistic choices. But it took me out a little bit. Like, every time I saw a makeup, I was like, it took me out. Like, there's scenes where they're in bed. The other scene where Joseph and Marie-Josephine are in bed and her makeup is impeccable. I woke up like this. Oh my God, her eyelashes. I'm like, no, it's taking me out.
I agree.
The movie.
200%. Maybe this is also something that, you know, it's included in my assessment of the modern elements. Yeah. The makeup took me off as well. And it was very obvious. It was very obvious. Mini Driver with eyeshadow and I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, it's a choice. This is the choice that they make visually. But yeah, it took me out. But again, it's a tiny week. It didn't detract from my enjoyment. And it didn't detract from anything. It's just, it took me out once in a while. It's like, that scene where she's like, shouldn't she be all like no makeup, all sweaty? Like, didn't they just have a lot of fun? But I mean,
maybe her last shower is like way days ago, you know? Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. And the second one, we just mentioned it. Mini Driver's casting was for me a bit, you know, she took me out a little bit as well. I'm not sure what, like, there are certain faces that belong to period and others that don't. And for me, she's like too modern. Her face is modern. I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Of course, people like with her face existed, obviously. But anyway, it's I don't know how to explain it. It was her casting. She did well. She's an amazing actress, but it was my least favorite choice in terms of casting. All right. So the next question on the quiz, Gabby, for you. What is your shining candle? One thing you loved?
Well, we extensively talked about this. I was very touched by the female roles. And for my shining candle, I'm going to highlight the role of Samara Weaving, the woman who played Marie-Josephine. I think her performance was so, so beautiful, so dignifying for a woman in her situation. I really liked her. I didn't know about this actress, I have to admit. I didn't know her career until now. And I think her expressions, as I said, she got a lot of very good dialogues, throughout the film. I'm going to give her my shining candle. I was torn between Nanon, the mother of Joseph, because I think that this actress also smashed the role of Joseph's mother. But yeah, as I said, all in all, the female roles and Samara Weaving and Ronki, they did incredible jobs. How about yours?
I agree. Thank you, Gabby. I agree that she was really beautiful. And she plays this very important character, which is the society woman, right? The aristocrat woman who was trapped essentially in her marriage, right? There's no, you know.
Yeah, and who dares to go so far, you know? Who dares to cross the line and love a black man?
Yeah.
For her situation.
To find love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both. She dares go out and sing opera.
And sing opera.
Go, yeah.
and cross like all lines.
All lines.
So I think it was.
It's such a sad story, and you know, we have talked about this extensively throughout the podcast seasons. You know, the marriage of convenience. You were married off. You have no choice. There's no love. The concept of love in marriage is very new. Anyway, my shining candle is going to go to an actor as well. I love the performance of Kelvin Harrison Jr. He's an extremely compelling actor to watch. My goodness, he carries this movie with majesty, with elegance. He's athletic, charming, smart, absolutely believable. He's absolutely believable in this role. Even his arrogance, because he is at times a little bit arrogant. That was like a character flaw that he had.
I'm going to say something about that, but finish your.
Yeah, even his arrogance is well earned. I truly, truly love his performance. I didn't know him. I had seen him in the new Cyrano, and I don't want to say too much about that movie, but I had completely forgotten. I kind of erased that. I erased that movie.
from your records.
I erased myself. I also do erasure. I'm sorry, I apologize. He was remarkable. I really loved him. Like, I could watch him over and over. I could watch his movie over and over and over and over again just to see him.
May I say something to that? May I comment your shining candle? Because please. I disagree. I wasn't really moved by his performance. As I said, for me, he was overshadowed by the other roles. No. Of course, he was impressive playing the violin. I found that really cool. And I found that arrogance, it was like, for me, this is maybe also something that was like, I don't know. Is this really plausible? I don't know. But then, this is really plausible for Suna. But then I saw an interview with the cast of the film, and he mentioned that he asked the director what kind of approach. There's so little literature on this figure. So what kind of approach do you expect on this? Do you want to go for the film? And they said, go for whatever you want. And he went for Prince. He said, you know what? I think of Joseph Boulogne like Prince. So he got inspired by Prince and Prince's performance and Prince's theatrical stage persona to play Joseph Boulogne. And then after hearing that, I understood his choices in the film. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yes. The high heels.
And the bam.
the majesty. The
swag. He had a certain swag.
The swag. No. Of course. No. I loved it. I guess I saw Prince.
You saw Prince, and I didn't see it. I saw. And maybe this is why I thought.
I absolutely adore it. I was so, oh God, it was like delicious to me. I was like, oh, this man. And of course, this is a choice and we don't know. But we cannot forget this is the 18th century ancien regime. Have you seen the fashion of this period? Everybody go and look at the book and look at the shoes that the men were wearing.
Totally
look at
Prince.
The stockings that the men were wearing. Look at the jackets. Look at the wigs. This was fashion. This was flamboyance. This was all out flamboyance. So I was like, yeah. Men were flamboyant. Men were like this. And he was one of them. He was the best. I loved it. I know this might be anachronistic. Of course, this might be anachronistic for sure. But for me, it fit and I enjoyed it. I was like, oof. I was just like, give me more. This is delicious to me.
Very beautiful. I have to say, I didn't know this actor at all because I haven't seen Cyrano, and he has a very short,
important. Filmography.
Thank you. Yeah. So I have to admit that I was not familiar with his filmography until now. What I did like is, of course, his entire style of when he's not wearing a wig, his braided hair. It had a lot of attitude, so that was really cool. That came across. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oof. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Here comes my favorite question of the quiz. Stolen costume or prop. So what piece of clothing or prop would you like to keep from Chevalier?
Baby, Nene, it's typical for me to answer this question with an indecisive answer. So I'm always taking two things. It's becoming a running gag in this section. Okay, I'm going to mention both, and then I'm going to have to pick one. And the wigs of the men, we saw a lot of wigs on men, which they were beautiful. They all had a black velvet lace.
Bow.
A black velvet bow. And I love that. Oh, the wigs were amazing. The wigs were so tidy and sleek.
Oh.
They were very, very sleek. And they were all tied with this little black velvet bow that I would love to have a few of those. So that would be something that I would like to take. And I fell in love with some of the yellow chairs of Joseph Boulogne's apartment. So if he has some of the yellow chairs spare somewhere on storage, I would take one of those. Okay, those are my prompts.
Gabby, I mean, if people, this is audio, but I was just like nodding. The wigs. I'm sorry. My proper costume.
Yes,
I
please.
I was going to mention the men's wigs as well. These wigs are impeccable.
Impeccable.
I haven't seen such wigs in a long time because it's a choice as well. The wig, you know, can tell a lot about a character. You have this guy, you have a character with a messy wig, or this person is unkempt. This person is just grab this thing out of the door and put it on, like before going on to run some errands. No. The wigs in this movie are tidy, neat, and perfect. Ooh, I was obsessed with Joseph's wig. I was like, this is going to be my prop. I'm going to take this wig. I need it. I want it. I'm going to do every Zoom meeting with this wig on. Just give it to me.
Very good.
However, I want it. I really want this wig, I have to say. Yeah. But I'm gonna be greedy as well, like you this time. The entire set production of this movie was really, really beautiful. But there was one thing that I really love, and here comes the candles. In the very first scene of the movie, there's a violin duel between Mozart and Joseph. And you have the orchestra, and they have the music stands. And they had the candles, they had the candle holders in the music stands. I want this music stand. I want the 18th century music stand with the candle holder to put my candle there. No lights, no electronics. I want this music stand. Please.
I saw it, Nene. I know exactly what you mean because I thought of it as well. That would be really cool. Can you believe
this movie gave us? This movie gave us impeccable wigs and impeccable candles.
And the candle work, it was very good.
The candle work was top. Anyway, I'm going to stop here. Visually, this movie is wonderful. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to go to the next question. We have added a new question to the wicks and candles. Gabby, describe the film in three words.
This is a tough one. This is going to be a test for us throughout this season to answer this question.
Oh, it's a challenge.
Okay, here are my three words. Chevalier was for me awakening, polished, and musically nourishing.
Wow.
Do I have to explain my choice?
Wow. If you want, go ahead.
Well, awakening, because I didn't know about this story. I think it was very refreshing to learn about this, and also to kick off the process in my brain to picture people of color in that society. I think that was really cool. Polished, because as we mentioned, the cinematography, the set design, costume design, it was so impeccable. And it had a very polished touch in my eyes. The wigs were completely sleek and to the millimeter perfectly cut. So for me, the style was polished. And the music was amazing. Music by him, of course, also some original score for the film. The violin duel that they have at the beginning was amazing. And it has also some modern touches that I liked. And also the Caribbean music they show when he is going with his mom into this alley. I found the music was very beautiful. Nene, describe now Chevalier in three words.
I didn't write this down, so I'm just thinking. So I'm going to say surprising, fun, and moving. Surprising because when this movie came out, I was like, oh my God, what is this? You know, everybody going on the bandwagon of Hamilton. It's like, okay, it's great. It's fantastic. But I was like, oof, is this movie going to be any good? And when I watched it, I was just, you know, I got a lesson in humility because it was, I loved it. I actually, so I was surprised. I had no expectations about this movie. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I judged it before even knowing who made it. It was just like, oh, this movie, Chevalier, what is this? So I was very surprised, very pleasantly surprised. What's the second word I said? Fun. I had a lot of fun watching this movie. I guess it's the Prince effect. The you know, I found him fabulous, fabulous. It's a fun movie. It's not a boring movie. It's a serious topic, but it's fun. You are kind of going along this magnificent ride. I think he's a very compelling character. And it was fun. Like I was bored. And the third movie, I was surprisingly moved. Because the movie is not perfect, but there are moments that are so real and so important. I was moved throughout, especially those scenes with the mom. And especially, you know, it's scenes where he's trying to reconcile who he is and in this society and even just small moments of love between people, I found them real, well written. So I was moved throughout. Yeah. All right. So we are at the end of the quiz. The last question is, if given the chance, would you time travel to the period?
No.
Okay. Explain yourself.
Well, because I wouldn't live like somewhere, I don't know. I would be, let's say, to this period in Paris. We're on the verge of the French Revolution. I would be nobody in Paris, so I would be in trouble. And I had to think of George Sand. I recently read a novel about some part of her life, and she was in this book. They talk a little bit they talk a little bit of her days in Paris. She lived in Paris. And she heard, at some point, she heard the riots outside on the streets, and she got really scared. And somehow she managed to leave the city to go to the countryside for a while, because she was really, really scared of the riots going on the streets. And I had to think...
But that's later.
Okay. That's later. Anyhow, I read this book, and while watching this film, I had to think of Jersan in Paris, listening to the riots outside of her window. Yeah. On the streets of Paris. And I was thinking, I don't want to be in that situation. That would have been really, really scary. These were really aggressive mobs. People were desperate. People were on the verge of anarchy. They were starting a revolution. So I think the atmosphere of the city was certainly very tense. So I think I'd rather go visit on another time of history. I'd rather visit Paris some other time. How about you?
I'm going to Paris 1793. No. That's when the terror started. Like, no, choose another year.
Let me set the clock.
Just rewind a little bit or advance a little bit.
Or advance. I would advance. I would go a little bit later to.
Yeah, well, your son, the riots she heard was most likely in the 30s, right? Where they were,
it's completely different. Yeah,
different period. Absolutely right.
Different period, but she heard some riots in Paris, and there was mobs.
She lived through a major political upheaval as well.
Yeah,
Jersan lived through major political upheaval, and she wrote extensively about it as well. So, as people who know me know, I love the 18th century. Of course, it's 100 years. I'm fascinated by this period. For me, this period is absolutely fascinating in terms of fashion, music, thought, the Enlightenment, everything that was happening. When we ask this question, I always think, in which side of history would I have been? If we are a constant, like if I was going to come to the world in the 20th century, the 21st, the 23rd, the 18th century, and I was the same person, if I was to be the same person, I would have been somebody who sought justice, because this is my personality since I was a little girl. I'm a seeker of justice and truth since I had conscience. So if we are a constant in the cosmos, whatever time we come, we are a constant, right? I would have come at that period, I would have been a seeker of justice. So I think I would have been like Olympe de Gouges. Olympe de Gouges was a very important woman during the revolution. She wrote, when the Rights of Men were published, she came out with the Rights of Women, like, what about us? And she, so I would have been in danger. It depends. If I was a washwoman or a milkmaid, I would have probably be on the streets rioting, asking for bread. If I had been of a middle class, I would have been one of those people using my money to pay for revolutionaries. I am sure. If I had had more power, I would have been Olympe de Gouges. I hope that I would have been on the side. Of course, we know that the French Revolution devolved into anarchy and the terror, right? To the point that, you know, if you even were playing, you know, there were cases that were so outrageous. If you were even playing a theater piece, a play, and you play a character that sympathized with the monarchy, they could accuse you. Well, you're playing the character. How do we know you're acting? And boom, off with his head. So it was extremely, extremely dangerous time. But I'm really fascinated by this period. When I die, my hope is that, you know, that death is just like you can travel anywhere in the universe and time. My hope is that when I die, I can go and see Because my opinion is that when you die, essentially the knowledge of the universe is revealed to you. It's so complex that we, as living beings, we cannot. So when you die, you finally, you have the answers of the universe. I hope that I can go and take a peek. I want to see those cobblestones. I absolutely need to see those cobblestones with people marching. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh! And I would be so dead scared of
no, it's terrifying. Yeah. It is
of the dangers.
It is the worst period of time. Both you either were dying of hunger, or you were
being beheaded.
You have to escape. It was not the best time. Not at all. But I don't know. There's something about the 18th century that really fascinates me, and obviously to see all the clothing. Eat the food. What does it taste like? What does it smell like? What does the powder in the wick smells like?
Oh God, I don't want to know that.
No, but you know what? I'm sure you can find that today. I'm sure there are people
certainly
who have recreated those. So I'm sure we can smell that if we want.
Well, it must have been talc, and the talc that I know from our grandmother, of course, it smelled nice. So I can maybe, but it certainly didn't smell like talc. So I don't know.
So maybe the 18th century smelled like grandmas.
It doesn't smell like grandmas. Very good, Nene. Very good. Thank you so much for your passionate answer. We're not taking the train together this time.
Wait. I'm going after death.
Okay. The one with the ticket, the return ticket.
There's no return
ticket. It's custom.
All right. Well, Gabby, those are all the questions in the quiz. Now to finish this episode, let's finish with the last section. How many wicks and candles do you give Chevalier from 1 to 10? 1 being no candles and for 10 being all the wicks and candles.
I'm going to give it an 8, a very solid 8. It's a very, very good film. It goes by very fast, which I appreciate it a lot. We are living in an era where films tend to be 2 hours plus. And I think the longer a film is, the less you show your skill of really telling a good story. So I think a film that manages to tell a story well below 2 hours, that's master in skillfully done, you know? And I think this is a very, very good film that one can watch even more than once. It's impeccably done. It has brilliant performances, as I mentioned before, mostly by the women. The music is beautiful. And I am just taking off these 2 points because, as I said, I wasn't really touched by the performance of Kelvin Harrison Jr. And as I said, the entire style of this very classical period film, but also very modern elements, it took me off a little bit. So, 8 points. Eight, Entschuldigung. Not point. 8 wicks and candles from my side.
Excellent.
Thank you. How about you, Nene?
I'm going to give it 8 as well. I love how you said it, a very solid 8. I think this is a wonderful period film, very classic. This is a proper period film. Like, you love period films, you're going to love this one. It has incredible costumes, cinematography sumptuous, like the lighting, like the set designs. You really are going to enjoy it. You know, it tells a super important story, and I think it honors it. This is what fiction can do. This is what movies for wider audience can do. It's just he had a good budget. The movie looks amazing. It honors this character. I love this. Like, you know, with all the richness and storytelling and every possible tool to tell this story beautifully. So I love that. There's a few scenes at the end. The script is excellent. But there's a few scenes at the end where they had to kind of mash up a number of things, where it's like, it's not the greatest. You know, it involves Marie Antoinette. It's okay. It's just not perfect. So yeah, solid 8. I love the performances. I love the look. The story is an introduction, a very good introduction to this character.
They did many things. Yeah, they did many things well. They did more things well than what they missed. And maybe just like a finishing touch to this. I don't know if we mentioned this, but both the director and the producer are Black.
Yes. What else can you say? What else do you have to add?
Bring them on. We need more of these stories.
Exactly, because that's the thing. We are an example. Of course, I'm not comparing ourselves with these two brilliant creators, but when you give the microphone to people, to everybody, you get the stories. Why hadn't nobody told this story? It took a Black screenwriter and a Black director to tell it.
Brilliant.
There you go.
There you go. Very well, Nene. So this is 16 Wicks and Candles for Chevalier.
Amazing. Oh, thank you so much, Gabby, for this discussion. Thank you for being back for season 4. I am so thankful to you. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Nene. Thank you for this very passionate conversation, as usual. And I'm very looking forward for the next episodes in this season.
And everybody listening, thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we hope you join us for the rest of the season. Thank you so much.
Stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Mohen Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rowling. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.